Hey everyone, just a quick heads up, we did have some technical difficulties when recording this episode, so I apologize. We did the best we could. It's not that noticeable, but just in case, now you know. Love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
It's time for remakes, reboots, and revivals. A podcast for which there is no rival. So sit back and relax. You'll laugh till you collapse. It's all remakey, totally rebooty, also revivally. It's an original podcast
about unoriginality.
So obviously we're talking about Animaniacs. I'm really excited. Let's get right to it. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. Welcome to a very special episode of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Rolando and I are pleased to be joined by our special guests of this week, Joey and Nathan from the podcast The Animani Cast. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hey.
They are joining us all the way from sunny Arizona. Hopefully it's not raining or anything.
This is one of the rare occurrences where it is raining.
Hail, sleet. Yeah, it's bad.
Snow.
I was going to ride a bike this morning, and then I'm like, it's coming down from the sky? Wow. I don't know what's going on.
We literally haven't had any rain for months, and all of a sudden it decided to rain today, which is a welcome change for us.
A welcome change, yes.
Yes, but we're in Tucson, Arizona, the lovely Tucson, Arizona.
Oh my gosh, so you're all the way down there. I actually always wanted to visit Tucson, so nice. That's great. All right, well, with us also, as always, is our producer, Eddie Z.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi, Eddie.
Hey. And, of course, we'll be talking today about The Animaniacs, the 1993 TV show, and the 2020 Hulu reboot. So, Joey and Nathan have a show, The Animaniacast, where you guys talk about every single episode of the show and now the reboot. I'm curious, you know, what prompted you to start such a podcast?
It was Joey's idea.
Joey's idea?
It started in 2016 because the Animaniacs was, I think, just about to come out on Netflix at the time. And I'd always wanted to be I'd always wanted to do a podcast. And we thought Star Wars, but then I was like, no, there's too many Star Wars podcasts.
Oh, there's so many.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that. And if I ever want to talk Star Wars on podcast, I can just talk to one of my friends who have a podcast on Star Wars. So, no. So, honestly, it kind of came from, there's Animaniacs and, Animaniacast kind of sounded like a cool title. So I just kind of went for that.
It's a good title.
Yeah. And so I went to Nathan, basically, because he's my little brother, and I said, hey, you want to do a podcast with me? And he said, sure.
Yeah, I was worried he was going to beat me up or something. No, I don't know. I can't say no to Joey.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
Bully brother. Asked my other brother, and he said, no. So we were like, well, who else are we going to have? Because I felt like we should have like a third person. So I knew Kelly, who was someone that I knew online on Twitter and stuff, who just talked about Spielberg and Animaniacs all the time online. So I dropped her a line and said, hey, I know you don't really know me, but would you be interested in being on an Animaniacs podcast? And she was just like, all caps, yes. And she was like, perfect. And then pretty much from there, we just started talking about the series with no real goal in mind other than let's just talk about each episode, review it.
Yeah.
Before you know it, we started getting noticed by, first it was the Randy Beeman kid. You remember there was this little boy that came out, Colin, and he'd say, one time Randy Beeman,
he had a dream that he ate a marshmallow and then his pillow was gone.
The voice actor who did that originally was like, hey, I used to voice that kid. And we're like, really? Be on the show. And before you know it, the next thing we get this guy named Tom Ruger who reaches out to us and says,
what?
Hey, And we'd like, we'd like to be on your show. And like, absolutely, anytime. Like, oh my God, the creator of Animaniacs is reaching out to us.
That's dope, right? That's they reached fantastic. Out to you.
Yeah, and not yeah. only that, but it was like, sure. I was like, oh, he'll be on an episode. That'll be awesome. And he's like, no, actually, I was thinking about like, as an ongoing series of like, I'd come on and talk to you guys.
Oh, like, sweet.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
He's become like a really close friend of ours now. He's been on the show multiple times.
Wow.
We've gotten directors of the show, additional writers of the show, voice actors on our show.
Mm-hmm.
We've even just started a Patreon where if you Tom Ruger gives commentary tracks to each of the Animaniacs episodes.
Wow.
So
wow.
kind of like riff tracks where you can play the track and watch the episode again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really cool because I'm thinking it's just like,
it's fun just recording these episodes with him, just like talking over them, like talking about each episode with him. It's just like,
yeah,
all the things we're learning from like having done the episodes already. And then we're still learning things just because
yeah, for sure. And he's kind of a powerhouse, you know, when it comes to 90s cartoons. So that's amazing that you guys get him on so many episodes too and have such a relationship.
It's funny because we were talking before the show started. I mean, as a kid, we had no idea that Tom Ruger was like, we thought it was Steven Spielberg that just made yeah. right. characters and everything. Mm-hmm. But starting with
Tom, we're still waiting for him to be on the show, but
that's next week, I think, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Tune in.
No.
But yeah, just starting off, I mean, he did Tiny Toon Adventures, Animaniacs, Freakazoid, of course, the Pinky and the Brain spinoff. In additional mm-hmm. shows, even like Pup Named Scooby-Doo,
yep.
Road Rovers, which was a series there for a while, and even like Hysteria, and even as recently as the 7D. I mean, he's a great creative guy, and not only that, but surrounds himself with a lot of creative people to make mm-hmm. great content, which has, I mean, has lasted generations now. So, and not only that, but he's an incredibly nice guy. Incredibly nice and generous.
Cherry on top. That's awesome. Yeah.
I want to point out that you guys are our second pair of podcasting brothers because yes. our first were actually, well, they were three brothers, a trio, the Brotherhood of Batman. So I guess brothers and podcasts is a thing. I don't have a brother, so I wouldn't know. I have a husband, though, and he's right here. Yeah.
And it's so appropriate that it's two brothers. And even though she's not your sister, I'm sure now she's become your sister for the Animaniacast.
I mean, absolutely. It's so funny because I've talked with Kelly and Nathan now once a week for 4.5 years. So I've talked to those two more than I do most of my other friends. And
even the rest of our family.
I've only met Kelly in person. I met her in person once at a Star Wars celebration, and then we only had one other in-person interaction, which was about, 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, I think.
Animaniacs Live, we all went out to San Diego for an Animaniacs in concert, and that was the first time we actually all been in the same room.
Wow, I'm so impressed that there's an Animaniacs in concert.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, what is that like? I mean, the cast, I mean, they're constantly singing songs. So is it just songs from the actual show?
It's Rob Paulsen, who, of course, is the voice of Yakko. And
Pinky and Dr. Scratch's
sister. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's accompanied by Randy Rogel, who wrote some of the most famous songs of Animaniacs. Not all of them. Some people mistake that.
Yeah. But like Nations of the World. That was his first song that he ever wrote for Animaniacs. That's what got him the job. Was
wow,
like,
impressive first song.
Exactly. So both of them are. I mean, if you ever meet Rob Paulsen or Randy Rogel in person, I mean, again, I guess one of the nice things about doing this show about the subject of Animaniacs is we haven't met a jerk yet.
That's good.
Wow, that's great.
Every person that we've met and interviewed and talked to in person or online has all been just the nicest, funniest people. And it really, it's just been an awesome experience, really.
Yeah, like to the fan level even, you know, so like where some fan communities can be a little less.
Being a Star Wars fan is especially in the past 5 years, been one of the best and worst experiences of my life. Because it, fun as Star Wars is, you get some of the dregs of the internet coming out of the woodwork, and they're horrible. So
yeah.
I'm finding myself much happier, even though I am still a Star Wars fan. I don't talk Star Wars online anymore. I'm talking Animaniacs.
Yeah, exactly.
Side note, have you guys met Bernadette Peters?
Oh, no. I mean, she's off in New York. I mean, we haven't had the chance to meet her. I follow her on Twitter. She seems like a wonderful person.
She does. She's a favorite of mine. So I just wanted to check and see there.
Yeah, that would be so good. Like,
how is she related to Animaniacs?
She voiced Rita.
She voiced Rita, the cat.
Oh, that's okay. Got it. That's so funny. I actually just saw like one of the, because I was rewatching some of the earlier episodes, like the original run, and I was just like, oh, they have a really good. I didn't know it was Bernadette Peters.
Yeah. I knew it instantly.
They had to do less and less as they were going, just because it was probably getting harder and harder to get her on the show.
Like, yeah,
they had to fly her out to L.A. To do all the
wow.
And in the 90s, when she was still, you know, like big on the stage, that's crazy.
But Tom said that whenever she came on, she was just wonderful to work with, and that she just took it so seriously and would always like. She'd do it, and then go, okay, that's great. Let's move on. And she goes, no, I could do it better.
Wow. Wow. Look at that.
Even with a cartoon, just a little silly cartoon, she was a perfectionist. And
Love that.
She's great.
So I don't want to age anybody here, but I'm going to assume that most of us grew up watching the Animaniacs.
Oh, yeah.
I, for one, am a 90s kid. I was born in the late 80s, and I distinctly remember whenever the Animaniacs came on. It was around 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
Well, you're showing your ethnocentrism there, because different places of the country are probably different times.
In New Jersey, it came out around then. And yeah, I remember watching it very much as a child. But as I grew up, I kind of forgot about this show.
What
about?
Really?
Yeah, I did, actually. And it was only until revisiting it for this podcast that I've come to realize this is a kind of a gem of a show. What's your relationship with this show, Rolando?
I mean, I didn't. It's so funny. It's not a show that I think about all the time, but it would occasionally pop into my head. Specifically, there's always been something that, as a filmmaker, I think one of the stories I always loved was this episode, this short vignette, which was about gold foil like wrapping paper. It's almost like a short film, and it's about this. It follows wrapping paper. And as it gets like blown through the wind and kind of collected by people, used as like gum, as a thing to throw out gum. And it ends up ultimately in the hands of like a poor family who come to, you know, because it's like so beautiful, they take the time to kind of respect it. Right. And like they cherish it because it's like this beautiful piece of paper. And it was such a lovely short story. And that's something that I'm a filmmaker, right? An aspiring filmmaker. That's an episode that will constantly come to my mind, because it's like, for the most part, that was mostly silent filmmaking, storytelling, right? It had a narration in the beginning and the end, and I think that's it. And it's one of those things that does pop into my head. Occasionally, the Animaniacs theme songs will also run through my head, for sure, just randomly, because it's just ingrained. It's like an earworm.
Yeah, it's one of the catchiest theme songs ever, I would argue. So obviously you guys grew up watching this show.
Well, I gotta say, Rolando, that cartoon right there was A Gift of Gold, I believe is the title. And
that sounds about right.
I think that was one of the one and only stories that was actually pitched by Steven Spielberg. I think I read, which may or may not be true. We'll have to talk to Tom about that. But I believe what I read online was that Steven Spielberg actually came up with that kind of idea. Like, hey, do a story about gold wrapping paper. But you're right. That's something that was charming about the original, that they would actually just say, you know what, we're just going to do a story about gold wrapping paper today. This is not going to be a reoccurring character, but yeah, whenever people online say, what's your favorite side character, I always tease and say the gold wrapping paper.
It's such good
bring
storytelling
back the gold wrapping paper.
Yeah, seriously.
But so before we get into the Animaniacs, let's give a little background on the show. I actually was thinking about it, and you know, everybody who grows up watching cartoons are always like, oh, you know, cartoons were the best for me growing up. But I actually kind of want to stand by that for 90s cartoons, because comparatively to, say, the 80s, more so than the 70s, but the 80s, you know, it seems like cartoons were kind of losing their way in the 80s. And when the 90s happened, I think like cartoons started becoming smarter. They started being kind of for like all ages, and they started being more like satire and really sharp parodies and stuff. And I do think that the Animaniacs is one of the predecessors to that. So actually, I would love to defer to one of you guys for a little bit of history as how this show got started.
Well, really kind of started, I mean, back, let's go back, I guess, to Pup Named Scooby-Doo. Tom Ruger was doing that show for Hanna-Barbera. He'd worked for Hanna-Barbera for many years. And one of the folks he'd worked with, Gene McCurdy, had gotten a job at Warner Brothers. And so she was starting up this whole animation thing and said, hey, Steven Spielberg wants to do this kind of Looney Tunes show, but it's Tiny Toons. And would you like to come on here and audition for that? So he did. And got the job, and before you know it, Tiny Toons was off and running. And then from there, it was kind of just like they had their team from Tiny Toons, and they wanted to kind of do a new show of some sort. So they had done a few little things in Tiny Toons dealing with kind of black and white characters. Tom Ruger basically, you know, they came up with this idea of kind of these ink blot kind of characters, as he calls them.
Were they originally platypuses or?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Platypus and duck. Interesting. Like, okay.
And then, so then they went to these kind of like ink blotty kind of characters. And I think originally there were four of them, I think, at one point. And then they dropped
one of those. Wacky, slappy. they had Y's instead of O's, basically. And then.
But really, Yakko, Wacko, and Dot are modeled off of Tom Ruger's three children, Luke, Cody, and Nathan. Nathan being the oldest one.
Nathan, hey.
Me? What? Oh my God.
Yeah, and then of course Nate Ruger, who was, you know, they voiced, they kind of based Yakko's personality off of Nathan's, Nate Ruger's personality, who was kind of a talkative one. And then, of course, Luke, who was, I don't know if he ate like Wacko or not, but then Cody was the youngest in the, you know.
He was
the,
cute.
The cute one.
Baby Plucky was based off him, right?
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, Baby Plucky was based. Yeah. See, Tom, he went back to his kids whenever he needed inspiration for cartoon stories. So,
well, you know, you write what you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Baby Plucky in Tiny Toons would flushing the toilet or pushing the buttons.
Yes.
That was,
oh, that's such a cute episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was actually based off of little Cody Ruger.
Almost like word for word. Yeah.
The hotel room and everything like that.
Wow.
And voiced by Nathan Ruger, who then went on to voice Skippy Squirrel on the Animaniacs. So anyway, it's a family affair. or nepotism, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, all his children did a voice of someone, right? Like,
yes, at least
throughout the series. Yeah.
Wow.
It's nice being, nice being a kid of a guy who produces cartoons.
Yeah. you know, when we actually covered we covered Scooby-Doo on this podcast before, and, you know, when we were talking about the 80s for Scooby-Doo, the Scooby-Doo in Hanna-Barbera was kind of, like, in trouble, and I think a pup named Scooby-Doo is one of the things that helped save it. You know, it was one of our favorite versions of that show. Mm-hmm. And when Tom Ruger left and he went over to the Warner Brothers and started their whole animation team, he actually came up with some of the best. I think he was also he was a producer on Batman, which is, I think, such a great animated series.
It is. And I mean, I know the talent of Andrea Romano shows up here in Animaniacs. She's the one who does the voice casting, right? And
voice directing and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she is phenomenal for the Batman the Animated Series.
She directed about every cartoon in the 90s, I think. Even almost anything. She was the voice director. She was so, so busy and just such a talent. That's something we have yet to get on our show.
That would be a great cat. I've seen her so many times at Comic-Con, and she's such a lovely lady.
That's awesome. So what is the Animaniacs all about anyway? Like, how would you even describe that show to someone who's never seen it before?
It's a variety show. So we've got a cast of all sorts of characters with their own little fun little segments. Music, we got history, we've got comedy. It's a cartoon.
Yeah, musical numbers, all that good stuff.
Like, It's everything, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a music satire comedy.
Educational, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this had to qualify for like that educational standards that was like implemented in TV at the time period.
Yeah.
It seems like they kind of had alluded to some of that towards the end, where they had a guy named Reef Blunt, who was trying to make Slappy Squirrel do educational things, or yeah, it was kind of a little marijuana reference, we believe.
Maybe.
But anyway, you can see that for the most part, though, one of the things that made Animaniacs great was that it was produced by Steven Spielberg, but Steven Spielberg, for the most part, didn't have his hands like deep into it. Like, he didn't say, when I was a kid, I thought he created everything, because it says Steven Spielberg presents. I was like, wow, he's such a genius. He came up with all these characters. Well, mm-hmm. not really. He okayed them.
Yeah, he gave the final approval, redo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he gave these writers freedom. Basically, he was he would be hands off for the most part. He was doing Schindler's List and Jurassic Park at the time. So he would okay storyboards, or he would get the previews and say, this looks great, or tweak this or that. And they'd take those notes and do that. But really, it was great for Tom Ruger and his crew, because they just got to have fun. And they got to just do what they thought was funny. So you see all these references to these shows that they knew of growing up, like The Honeymooners.
And
don't know this stuff, but we just knew
Hearts
it was
of Twilight. Yeah, Hearts of Darkness.
Hearts of Darkness. Slash Apocalypse Now. There's a great episode of Hearts of Twilight that deals that was written by a genius, Paul Rugg, who is just an absolute comedic genius. He wrote that episode, and it's this wonderful combination of Jerry Lewis, Apocalypse Now, and Hearts of Darkness, the documentary, all put in together. And
so well.
As a kid, you have zero idea about what all this stuff is referencing. You just know it's funny. But they just, I mean, it's a marvel that they got all that stuff done.
It really is. I'm sorry.
No, I just remember the first time I ever heard about Friends was actually because of Animaniacs, right? So I knew about Friends through Animaniacs, because he did that segment called Acquaintance. And it's basically just Friends, but I didn't know about this. And then I saw Friends. I'm like, oh, I get it now.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I'm such an old movie lover. So when I revisited the show, there's this great episode where they're kind of like interviewing old Hollywood stars, because the whole premise too is that the Warner brothers and the sister were made back in the old days of the 30s and the 40s, and then they were locked in the water tower, and now they come out and they wreak havoc every so often. So there's these old interviews with old movie stars, and the running joke throughout among all of them is that Milton Berle and Yakko hated each other. They couldn't stand each other. And it's just like, kids don't know Milton. I don't think kids knew who Milton Berle was in the 1990s. But like, me watching it now, I'm like laughing my ass off. And in that same episode, there's this whole thing with Wacko being like, I need to use the bathroom, I need to potty. And he's like trying to find him. And it's such a perfect blend of actually rather sophisticated humor and just like silly ass humor. Mm-hmm. And that was one that stood out to me. And I'm like, this is the Animaniacs to a T. of kind of everything.
Which, too, like, as an adult watching it now, it makes me wonder. It's just like, were they making the show also for parents to enjoy if they had to watch it with their kids? I'm assuming like they had to be. They had to
100%. I think that is definitely part of. I think that was what part of.
I mean,
goal.
Like, and again, like as Joey said, just for themselves, even, you know, just like they didn't want to write things that they didn't want to write for. Like, so if they thought it was funny, they're like, it doesn't matter as much if the kids find it funny. We want the kids to find it funny, but we want to find it funny too. Like, so
it must be nice to create art for yourself that can speak to a generation. Because I feel like nowadays it's just like not Hollywood's MO, right? Like, it just isn't.
No,
it really did. It had. I remember even as because I remember the show came out when I was in, I guess either in eighth grade or maybe a freshman in high school. But I remember kind of like rushing home after, you know, as soon as school ended, I would rush home to go and see it. But I remember even back then, like going to the Warner Brothers store and I would be looking at Animaniacs merchandise, but there would also be people in their 30s or 40s looking at the Animaniacs merchandise as well.
Yeah,
it had
yeah.
this. It had this wide, people love this show from all ages, which is so funny to think about people now in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah,
to consider themselves fan, which is of the first run. But it really is a remarkable show in that way.
Yeah, it has a lot of appeal. Actually, I live in an apartment complex, and I heard the people above me watching the show just a couple of days before me, which I was just like, and I mean, I'm not really quite sure of their ages or not, but I just, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, the show still, because of the reboot, is still like, people still want to watch it.
Totally.
It has long lasting appeal.
I have the DVDs of Animaniacs at my school. I'm a teacher. And I'll put, you know, I'm the librarian over at my school. And so sometimes at lunch, I would put on the disc, just, you know, on the TV, just kind of play it in the randomly. And kids would just start and just watching and laughing and watching Wacko burping the classics or something like that. And just hysterically laughing. And it still holds up. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Oh, and one of my absolute favorite things about rewatching this was the fact that it's very musical. There's almost always a song.
Yeah.
And I actually was listening to one of your guys' episode, and I know that Kelly knows all the lyrics to the Nations, the song, and that you guys played this wonderful clip of someone of getting Rob Paulsen singing it, because I guess he still knows it from memory.
He is.
Yeah.
He's not only knows it from memory, but he's actually worked with Randy Rogel, and they've since written another verse updating, because some of those countries are no longer around.
and there are
more nations of the world that to be added. So they've added an entire verse that they perform at Animaniacs in concert, which is always the finale. It's
such a great song. Yeah,
and it's all, you know, done to the tune of the Mexican Hat Dance. With, I mean, like Nathan was saying, that was Randy Rogel's first song that he wrote. It was basically like his
It's before he got it was like his resume, like will you hire me? I have this song I want to play on your show.
He was working on Batman the Animated Series and then heard about this comedy show that they were going to be doing, so he said, well, I want to work on comedy, and they're like, no, you don't want to do that. So he sent that in, and Rob Paulsen got it done essentially on one take. They did a couple other takes just to kind of, you know, make tweak little things here and there. But
yeah, and they may have mixed two takes together, I think, in the final version. But
I don't know. I've heard it enough that I can maybe get 75% of it done.
I can get the first, like, three words.
And now, the Nations of the World, brought to you by Yakko Warner.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil.
That's actually, since I've seen it, because I'm really into songs like that, I would love to learn it. And they have a song about presidents, too.
That one's great, yeah.
I learned a similar song growing up, so I already know all the presidents, but I was like, this is fantastic. This is also a way to get kids excited about learning.
Yeah,
you know, it's
and
really
the,
smart.
The states and capitals is another great one for
that
kids.
Is, yes, states and capitals for sure is one of my favorites. Actually, the one that no one ever brings up, but I actually like them a lot, was the one that Pinky sings, which is about cheeses. The cheese roll, maybe because it's like so, you know, absurdist. Who cares? But yeah. I care because I love cheese. So.
But it's crazy because, you know, since the 90s, there's so many animation shows that have music in them. That's such an important element, you know, from like Family Guy to South Park to Steven Universe. And since then, too, in the 90s, like animation has become a thing that is so socially acceptable for not only children to watch, but for adults. And I'm not saying that it's all because of the Animaniacs, but it's definitely one of the first shows that came out that started to bridge this gap. I mean, doing my research too, I'm like, my gosh, like all the shows that followed after it, this was kind of, in a way, a pioneer. Also with the Animaniacs, because it's a variety show, there are other characters other than the Warner Brothers and the Warner sister too. There's Pinky and the Brain, who is probably the most famous.
Yeah,
they got their own spinoff.
Yes. Yeah, and everybody knows Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, and it got primetime airing on the WB, too. It wasn't even just, like, kids' TV. It was like on primetime television.
Yeah, there are people where I'll be like, oh, and Pinky and the Brain, they're like, they're on that show, too? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where they
started. I had forgotten that's where they started.
Yeah.
What?
Like, there were other characters that hasn't aged as well. I think one of them was Rita the Cat. And I actually forgot the other ones. What were
Hello Nurse did not age well.
Oh, Hello Nurse. That's actually the first thing my girlfriend said.
Hello Nurse still looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
She's very smart.
It is kind of sad in some ways that they I mean, yes, it today they would never have Hello Nurse portrayed in the way that they did. I mean, it was, you have to kind of think back then, the mindset was they just came off of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. You have kind of just Jessica Rabbit kind of character. And Hello Nurse started off in the show as kind of a ditzy blonde, kind of, again, thinking back to when I was a kid, you had the blonde jokes and you had this, kind of, this was just like,
this is
comedy. But eventually Hello Nurse did. I mean, they revealed that she had a lot more smarts than was originally.
Yeah, I think she's like a doctor, isn't she? Doesn't she have a PhD too?
Like, Wacko sings this whole song about how he loves Hello Nurse and how she has a doctorate. She speaks fluent Japanese. She's a mathematician. She does all these, you know, she's incredibly smart. And of course, in Wacko's Wish, the animated movie, they bring up a lot, even in song, how she's a very smart person, but everybody keeps underestimating her. She wants to be known for her brain and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. But then there's like, yeah, Minerva Mink would be the character that's like.
Minerva Mink only had, what, two episodes?
I think two. She was in a couple other segments, but she had two standalone segments of her own.
I don't remember Minerva Mink that well.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's probably best that you don't.
That one is more like problematic than probably
totally. I mean, it was done kind of like, let's do a Tex Avery kind of character where she's kind of like, she drives all the animals crazy around her, and that they're trying to catch her attention and stuff. Yeah. Like, she's just this sexy mink character. FYI, do not Google Minerva Mink on Google Images. It's not.
Oh.
Thank you for the heads up. But definitely the characters with lasting power have been Pinky and the Brain. And I will say that Orson Welles impersonation for Brain is so impressive.
Yeah, there were a lot of other characters that I think, while Rita and Runt, perhaps, you know, Rita was always, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest, I like Rita and Runt much better now than when I was a kid.
Yeah,
For Mindy and Buttons was, and the Hip Hippos are perhaps kind of lower tier.
I mean, I
don't even remember them.
The hippos I never thought about until I was rewatching episodes. I'm like, oh, that's right, I remember them. But Katie Kaboom is the one that I used to love. I used to love her sketches, which is, and maybe this could just be like, just kind of about to enter those years of just being a hormonal teenager, but like, it's so relatable. Like, Katie Kaboom is just a story about this girl who, anything goes wrong, she will flip out.
Yeah. Which is, again, a problematic one nowadays. You can't,
it is,
like,
right?
Because these women, they don't know how to control their
emotions. Yeah, hysterics. So they just, absolutely. Hysterics.
So, like, rewatching them, like, I don't like these anymore. And then watching them all, like, you know, because they're all the same one, too. Like, there's four or five of those, right? Like,
it's essentially the same joke. The best Katie Kaboom, however, it features one of our other side characters, which we happen to love, who's Chicken Boo.
Chicken Boo.
Who the man-sized chicken / rooster, whatever I don't know. He's
he's just a chicken, right? But like,
he impersonates humans.
Yeah.
Well,
we're disguised to be like human guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a man.
He's a Chicken Boo. Yeah. He basically just, his whole premise was, he's just going to be a ballet dancer, or he's going to be a cowboy or whatever. And everybody just sees this, you know, cowboy, and they all admire this.
Yeah, they think he's the best ever. They think,
One person who says, that's not a guy, that's a giant chicken. And they're all, oh, you crazy guy. Those, you knew where it was going each time. I loved those segments each time. I love Chicken Boo because it was just the most innocent kind of chicken. He he seemed like such a nice guy.
Yeah, he wasn't like malicious or anything. Yeah, he was just like, I feel like he actually like identified as the cowboy or something. Like I feel like he is a human. Like he's just in a chicken body, like, you know, like
I'm definitely missed that.
Like a
one.
Transhuman.
See, yeah, exactly. You know, and I was just like, you know, stop like chasing him out of town. Like, just accept him. And he does so well. Like, he's so good at ballet and all these other things. Like, when he does these things, he's so good at it. And aww, it's crazy that when they find out, then it's just like, no, like, oh, get him out of town. I'm like,
aww.
Like, what does this say about society? So
yeah.
Yeah, right. A nice message about acceptance. Yeah.
I think, and of course, there was the good feathers.
Oh, of course, the good feathers. How could we forget
based
those?
Upon
we got them on our show, Joey.
That's true. We had a whenever we go on somebody else's podcast, we always have to brag about the fact that we reunited the good feathers.
You reunited them? You got all of them?
Yeah, we got all three of them.
That is awesome.
At the same time.
Well, that is bragging rights.
In Tom Ruger's house.
Oh,
wow. That's... My God.
I was just going to do it virtually, but then when I talked to the guy who did Pesto's voice, he's like, oh, it's been forever since I've seen those in person. So it was Chick Venera. So I was like, oh my gosh,
I think we have to do this in person.
My goodness.
I drove out to LA and luckily Tom opened up his house for us. And next thing you know, we're setting up our microphones in Tom Ruger's living room and we're eating pizza and everything afterwards with the voices of Animaniacs.
But did they act out like the good feathers?
Oh yeah. It's
good. That makes me fantastic. That warms my heart.
Yeah, we had the god pigeon came in even, and
very fun talking to the voice actors who would just get into character immediately right when you're next to them and just riff off each other. And yeah, they hadn't seen each other for 20 something years, ever since like the last episode they recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. A front seat to the voice casting, which I think is also one of the best elements about this show.
Totally.
You know, on top of like, you know, the crazy creativeness behind it and the musicalities of it, like these people are really talented voice actors, with Rob Paulsen being Yakko and Pinky, and Tress McNally, who's actually a favorite of mine because I'm a big Simpsons and Futurama fan, and she's a recurring on all of those shows, and I just love her as a voice mm-hmm. actress. And Jess Harnell as Wacko, who I'm sure based it off of Ringo Starr or something.
Yeah, Jess did it kind of based off Ringo and kind of blended some of the other Beatles.
Just
Beatles.
Yeah, but he can do each Beatle impression. He could do an impression of each Beatle.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. So I'm such a fan of voice acting in general, which is also why I love shows like The Simpsons and Futurama. And I think that's one of the things that gravitated me to this show. So I can't, I mean, just being a front seat to that voice acting talent right there must have been probably one of the best experiences.
Totally. It was definitely a highlight of definitely not only podcasts, but just in my life in general. To be able to do that, because that is total bragging rights right there. And I think we got to mention, just to you know, wrap up our discussion of all these different
side characters,
because there's so many. Yeah. Nathan, who are we forgetting?
Slappy Squirrel and Sleepy. Oh, but there's a big call to bring back Slappy is probably the most requested after, you know.
Yeah.
I agree.
She's my favorite.
Yeah.
And she was voiced by Sherry Stoner, who was... not only wrote a lot of episodes of Animaniacs and Tiny Toon Adventures, but her background came from improv. And they had a lot of people in Animaniacs who were writers. Sherry Stoner, Deanna Oliver, John P. McCann, and Paul Rugg, who all came from like this improv sentimentality where that's not done that often, I don't think, in cartoons today. You know, you get writers. You don't get these people who are like, well, we improv it, and we kind of bounce off each other. And I think that just brought so much life to definitely that character of Slappy, because that was something that she just came up with in her improv years. Just making a woman voice. And I really do miss Slappy.
She also has a connection to the Little Mermaid.
That's right. What are we going to call it?
I don't know what that's even called.
Animation model, when they're like...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
the, like...
Like combing her hair with a fork.
Like for rotoscoping?
What is it? Yeah. Well, basically, kind of like rotoscoping, yeah, where they would kind of look at her facial expressions.
So modeling her facial expressions and her movements, like, are all based off.
Yeah, she did so, like, as well. So, yeah, she's...
That's adorable.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's awesome.
She's got the resume. She's got...
How many different spinoffs of... the Animaniacs were there other than were there any more other than Pinky and the Brain?
Well you got Pinky Elmira and the Brain.
Yeah, which
that's
is like
a
mix
a
of yeah. Tiny Toons
and the Brain though.
Yeah,
so really, I think it was pretty, I mean, basically it.
Yeah,
I mean, you had
I would say just Pinky. Well, I guess you could call this new reboot in it
you could off. Yes, you could,
because yeah. it's even on Hulu, it's on is as a separate show.
That's true,
like when you watch mm-hmm. it, so
it's true.
I'd say it's like a spinoff.
Yeah, and actually, that's a perfect segue for us to start talking about the new
Hulu
new
version. Animaniacs.
Yeah, they've been talking about this for 2 years. Actually, I remember hearing about this in 2018.
Did we cover it in our news? I think we might have actually.
I think we might have. Yeah, and we are told that we're going to get 2 seasons. The first one dropping in November of last year.
Damn.
And yeah, I mean. That first episode, by the way, it was like meant for this podcast.
It was. Truly, it was. That song should be our theme song.
It should be our theme song. Yeah.
Run out of ideas for fresh new shows. So Hollywood did the only thing it knows. Murphy Brown, Melrose Place. Gilmore Girls, Lost in Space. That's so Raven's what they're craving.
I know that's a show worth saving.
I vote X-Files for a comeback.
Your company's still a real snack.
Would the Golden Girls be darker
if we resurrect B. Arthur?
Reboot it, renew it, reshoot it, redo it, and reuse it, retool it, abuse it, just do it. If you wanna make some easy cash, just recycle and rehash.
Repeat it, reinstate it, reheat it, recreate it. There's no need to feel frustrated, simply just regurgitate it
for a guaranteed rating smash.
Pick it up out of the trash, come on, just reboot it.
It was actually such a great first episode. Any history at all about the reboot also that you guys wanted to share?
Well, it kind of had a I guess you kind of say a mixed reception history. The main issue that I had and still continue to have, and some fans might still kind of have, is that Tom Ruger, who created the show and the original writers and stuff, other than a couple, weren't approached to return to the series.
I heard about that.
The voice yeah. actors were all approached, and honestly, the show was initially pitched by Spielberg when he was going to the networks. He emphasized the voice actors are coming back. Whereas to me, it's like, gosh, you kind of had. I don't want to say it's disrespectful to the writers who came up, won them multiple Emmys and even a Peabody Award.
Yeah,
but come on, to not include those folks is interesting. I'll say that the Warner Brothers executives did that. They really wanted to go into a new direction, and so now they have the main showrunner is Wellesley Wild, who came off of Family Guy, who had worked on Family Guy for a few years, and mm-hmm. Gabe Zwar, who I don't know what he worked on before, but. I know that Gabe Zwar has gone on record as saying he didn't really like the show.
Well, oh, he wow. said he wasn't the biggest fan, which I was like, we could say that too when we started mm-hmm. our Animaniacs. Because, like, there are some big fans out there. I'm like, wow.
Definitely.
There
are, and I think Nathan and I still don't consider ourselves necessarily on a scale of big fan of Animaniacs.
Yeah.
There are much bigger fans than us.
I would want to be that big of a fan. It's so much. It's so difficult. It's.
Well, I think sometimes as a creator though, you don't have to be a big fan to produce good work.
Yeah.
You just have to have a respect for the property. You have to understand yeah. what makes it work.
An
you need to have an understanding. So you know.
Yeah, and there's been to that note of having respect for the original property. While we can't say with absolute certainty because we don't know for sure. We've talked to. Few people that worked on the show and have worked used to work
Yeah, worked off the show.
who kind of have mixed ideas of whether or not the people in charge actually like the original. I've heard some I've heard some things, you know, of so and so said, you know, would make fun of the original show and badmouth it and everything like that, and other people say, no, that's not true at all, he loves the show and this and that. So it's really, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, I suppose. But
I mean, the truth is, like, execs tend to be very far removed from the creatives, and to be honest, sometimes the audiences are trying to reach.
Yeah, 100%.
But it is a reboot in the sense that, I mean, they weren't, it's some people were hoping kind of for, it's where you guys have the reboot versus revival, and to me, a revival is kind of like you just continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas this is a reboot in the sense that they're going to allude to stuff in the past, but they're going to also go in a new direction completely. And this new show, I think kind of as much as it does bring to mind like the original series, it also feels like a very different animal.
That's so interesting. Okay. I'm going to ask you, like, all right, so why do you feel that way? Because I would classify myself as a fair weather Animaniacs fan, right? Where I remember the show. It pops into my head every now and then, but like when I was rewatching the show, I actually felt that it was like, oh, this is pretty close to the original. I do have my critiques on it though, but what would you say, what would be your argument to make it feel like a different beast?
Well, Nathan, you can chime in.
I think it's stuff on the side, like margins, because I think like mm-hmm. in the you have a lot of the voice actors, you know, mm-hmm. it's like that's a key part, and you're like, oh, that's great. You got the musical score, which is still done by Julie and Steve Bernstein, which is, we got the actual orchestra music and everything like that going through. So like, it sounds very similar. You're like, okay, this is really good. But then like, there's little things on the margins where it's just like, oh, I don't know if Dot would be beating up her brother, like, trying to, like, kill, like they never really hurt each other before.
Yeah.
And now
they're
like violent to each other. And then there's just like really gross humor at times
where I'm
and there's a lot of times where they're trying to be extra like relevant to current events,
mm-hmm.
where there was always like allusions every now and then, like every 10th episode there might be like, oh, there's Ross Perot or something, like I don't know who that is, but it doesn't really matter because the show's still funny. But but now it's like every episode's like, oh, we're going to Russia or
So actually, I agree with you. I caught that immediately. However, I think that's more of a symptom of our culture today than it is anything. Just because back when Animaniacs was around, like pop culture, everyone knew pop culture. It was one singular pop culture. Like anything that was popular was talked about around the water cooler and around your friends and stuff. We don't have that anymore because of things like streaming, because of things like even TikTok and YouTube, right? Like every pop culture is very fragmented and very separated. I was actually talking about this through text with a friend because I was coming with this theory. It just made me think. It's just like the reason I think they're going to like these current events and politics is because that might be the one singular thing that we all still know as a general audience about. Like we know like when they're talking about the bun control, it was a very thinly veiled reference to gun control, right? But it's one of the few things that like, because that's what made Animaniacs so good in memory, right? Was it was so pop culture reference heavy. There is no pop culture anymore. It's hard to do that. And I think their solution was like going with like a commentary on, you know, current events and people. Now I agree with you. I don't know how successful that was. It wasn't my favorite thing, but you know, what else could they do?
I'm fine with doing like a couple. I think they went a little too hard in it. But I hear second season is better too than the first season is what we hear.
So we talked to who actually still work on their show. They're like, hey, we really get our footing in the second season. So we can't wait to see what that looks like. Yeah. Every show, I mean, the original series.
Even the original show, not every episode's going to be a winner. Like,
of course, yeah.
So...
Well, especially with the amount of they were producing so much. So that's the other thing, right? Because here you have so much fewer to judge them by, as opposed to the original, where like the first season had what, like 30 something episodes.
The first season had 60.
Oh, see, I'm going based off of what Hulu told me it has. It has like 30 something on Hulu that's available that I was rewatching.
No, Hulu separated it out because they're like, this is crazy. No one's going to watch six. We'll separate it out. Yeah. We'll cut it into five equal seasons almost. But the first season has over, you know, it has 60% of the episodes.
Crazy.
Total,
so
know, of the five seasons.
But I think, you know, one of the sad things about this one. All right. So I think for me, I think it was just that it was just like too much. Well, the Animaniacs, obviously, is a show. But like it was either Animaniacs or Pinky and the Brain. And I was so sad. It's just like, wow, no other. I'm just like every episode is just like one or the other. I'm just like, I can't.
Yeah.
And then that song, you know, Pinky and the Brain just gets like old real quick. It's just like, ooh, I can't stream this. I cannot stream. This is not a streamable show. It's basically what it is. It's like I need that full day to like digest.
Binge watch it.
Yes. Right.
Even though we do an Animaniacs podcast, I've been dragging my feet really with watching all the Nathan's watched all the episodes. I've watched like 90% of them. And part of that is because I want my reactions to be fresh, you know, when we actually talk about the episode per week. But the other part of it is I just don't, there's something about the reboot that is just not as fun for me as the first one was. The energy, the pacing, and really it's just for me, the new show feels at times mean. It feels and whether that is just the characters, whether it's Dot or hitting Yakko or Wacko, or they're shooting him with little lasers, or they're Wacko hitting Yakko on the head with a giant mallet instead of the external people that they should be doing that to. Or it's the Brain. There's this, we just talked about this episode, the Brain is much meaner in this series, and Maurice LaMarche even had issues with it.
I think he was able to tone down some of it because he was talking to,
to the way he was talking to Pinky. What was the most recent episode you guys covered?
Well,
for being mean, Joey, you got this.
There's an episode where they introduce a character named Julia, who is this female mouse who, takes a mouse, just another lab mouse, and changes her DNA to be smart like him. Mm-hmm. And so he says, you know, you're going to be my first lady and you're going to marry me and I'm going to run for president. And without giving too much away, she basically ends up like always
being
happens.
Tortured.
Yeah, she ends up being tortured by the Brain with electricity and she starts
catching on fire. And
and the Brain, it's just like I've never seen him as.
Wait, so this was a thinly veiled. She was a Melania?
Not really at all. It was just all... it just came off as sadistic.
And even some of the ideas he had in that one, like little children building bombs with their tiny fingers. And I was like, I don't know if he's ever talked about this before.
Like building, like blowing up cities now. And
He went Stewie Griffin, huh?
He's more Stewie than he was before. I think it was.
Yeah, so it's just like little things like that I'm like, I just don't know... It just little things like that really bother me, and there's also this whole episode that deals with this hunter hunting down all of the side characters of Animaniacs.
Yes, I just saw that one. I just thought that was just so dark.
It was really dark. It was a little
the hunter like the other than like the ending. I think it's one of the funniest Animaniacs like episode. Like I think there's some of the funniest. Like lines, and I think it's so clever on so much of it, and then like that ending, I'm like, ooh, it's so dark, and I don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
Oh man, I didn't see that one.
It was an episode of the reboot that I loved, and then all of a sudden hated.
Yeah, it's my one of my favorite and least favorites at the same time. It's kind of fun. It's
50% of that cartoon, and then just turn it off because.
I will say it came at the right moment for me, Stu, because I had just asked Eddie. I was like, you know what I miss? I miss all the other characters.
Funny because it's like, whatever happened to the other characters?
They press play,
and we put it on. It was like,
they're all dead.
And I was like, this is horrible. This is horrible.
That's crazy. What number is that?
That's like episode six, I think? I think it's like six. Five or six.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was like the halfway point.
It's an odd number for sure.
Mm-hmm. I didn't finish it because I actually did kind of not enjoy the reboot. I felt like the first episode, they worked a lot on. You know, they wanted to come back with the bang and they wanted to have something to say from the, you know, really actually, I liked the Jurassic Park opener. Really enjoyed the rebooted song. And then as the episodes went on, I just kind of, I guess it was less charming. Like the original Animaniacs is a very charming show. You know, even when it's being like silly and goofy, it's got a lot of heart to it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the reboot was lacking heart. Even with like its Odyssey spoof and at the end with, you know, with Trump, I was like, oh man, it went in this direction. Like I feel nothing, you know, it's not really reaching for my heartstrings in little ways that the original did. Now I'm not saying that the first,
but yeah, like, they were cute. The original Warners, they were so cute. Like they were, yes. they had a heart to them. You could tell that these crazy kids cared for one another. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Donald Trump. Yeah. I mean, as we've mentioned a couple episodes on our show, I'm no Trump supporter. I don't find the guy funny anymore.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm over him. Like, I don't want to see him anymore. Yes, like,
that's a great point.
Yeah, in 2018, the writers, you know, they had no idea what the heck was going to go on in 2 years from now with Trump. But
yeah,
by the time that came to this Trump stuff, I'm just like, I can't watch it. Like, I can't. Like, I don't want to think about him anymore. And so when he's so prominently kind of made fun of in a few episodes, that I'm like, oh, come on. No, I don't want to do this. Yeah.
I kind of felt that way. And I guess I need to, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Animaniacs, so I'm going to kind of use this as a reference to something that I am really big on, which is the Muppets, right? And how I feel about this new version of the Animaniacs is how I feel about new things that involve the Muppets, where it's compared to the Muppet Show and the early Muppet movies, these new Muppet things, I can't watch at all. Miss Piggy's too mean. It's too contemporary in a way that is just so not the Muppets, and it's not wholesome at all. They tell fart jokes. Muppets are not about fart jokes. You know, it's little things like this that I, as a person who grew up watching the Muppet Show, has rewatched them over and over again and just grow to love, can see that it's not the same thing. It's kind of like oddly vapid. And I was starting to feel, from what I saw from the original to this new version, this reboot, I felt that it was kind of like, it looks like the Animaniacs. It sounds like it, but it doesn't feel like it. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely one of the biggest things that I came away from. I actually couldn't finish it because I wasn't enjoying it as much as I thought I would. I just kept going back to the original.
Yeah, it has its moments, definitely, for sure. It still has moments that make me chuckle. But yeah, I think that...
Are you talking about Muppets or...
Yeah, both. I think the character of Muppets is actually fantastic because, yeah, I mean, I will say, like, for that when the Muppets did that Office series...
Terrible.
Well, and this is what happens when you have like executives who are kind of like behind. And I think that mm-hmm. Muppet series, they had been, you know, I've seen interviews afterwards saying how the executives were like, we need to make it like this. And the people who are actually the puppeteers themselves, who before in the original Muppet Show were kind of the ones coming up and riffing off of each other and stuff, were kind of pushed to the side, and they weren't kind of given that chance to kind of do what they want to do. And unfortunately, for me, that Muppet Show finally started to get good in the last like maybe one or two episodes, and then the series was canceled.
Oh man, I didn't make it that episode. Far.
Yeah.
You need to get back that magic again. Now
I respect you, Joey. Sometimes you got to give shows a chance to be let down. I give them a full season to let me down.
It's like after the four episodes for me.
Yeah,
I give them four episodes.
I mean, even with like, I'm glad you guys really appreciated the pilot. There are definitely things in the pilot of Animaniacs I liked, but one of the biggest oversights I thought was like, boy, there, where's Dr. Scratch and Sniff? Like the main thing I thought was when I was thinking of the Warners, I think of Dr. Scratch and Sniff as their dad almost, you know. So it's like, if I were the Warners, I would want to see Dr. Scratch and Sniff as like my first stop, and instead they kind of just kind of.
They give us Ralph.
Yeah, they go see Ralph, which is nice too. But I mean, it just seemed like.
I mean, they have the voice of Scratch and Sniff through Yakko. I mean, like.
Yeah.
It's not like they're like, oh, we had to hire another person. Like, it's so easy. Like, right there.
So it just seems kind of like missed opportunities. And again, just kind of like. I think that what happened when you have stuff with the Muppets, where you kind of push the original people who are the creatives behind it to the side because you have this new idea. It kind of is the same thing with Animaniacs, where you have the executives at Warner Brothers saying, you know, yeah, those guys did great in the past, but now we need more contemporary people to kind of spice things up and bring it to a new audience, and that doesn't necessarily work. One of the writers that we had on the series, who was on the original series, we asked him about the reboot. It was John P. McCann. We're like, what do you think about the reboot? And he knew he wasn't coming back, but he said it's kind of like if you said we're going to reunite Nirvana. And none of the people came back, and they're all playing like accordions or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Kind of sounds like they're playing their hits.
They're playing the songs. Yeah, they're playing the hits.
The same. And so it's kind of the similar kind of deal where it's like, yeah, it's kind of them.
Yeah, it's zombie Animaniacs, as they say about The Simpsons now, is zombie Simpsons, you know, because it's not the same show.
Yeah, it yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, we've already talked about our feelings on it, but, you know, we always like to ask ourselves the question, was this needed? And I just, final thoughts, you know, anybody want to start?
I think it was needed because we would be running out of episodes of Animaniacast, right? It gave us more things to talk about.
No. Yeah, again, respect.
Good. Yes. Yes. Hell yeah. Content.
So then we started talking about Tiny Toons and Freakazoid and Pinky and the Brain, but yeah.
Which I was having more fun doing that than talking about it.
Wow. Look at that.
We talked with Nathan and Kelly about this. We kind of go, gosh, I can't wait to kind of get rid of through these reboot ones so I can go back to the classic stuff again. Like
go back to Freakazoid and all those. But we probably would have, we might have ended the show after the movie had, so we might not have continued.
We would have said, like, well, we did it. Like, well, yeah, no need to do Tiny Toons or anything. So in that way, yes, I'm glad it came around. And I'm glad that, here's the thing, while I do not necessarily love the final product of what the reboot is, what I do like about it is introducing people to the franchise and to, through seeing it promoted on Hulu, it's getting a new audience, and therefore people say, huh, that's something, and then they go back and they check the full catalog of the original stuff, because being only 13 episodes, if you really liked what you saw in the reboot, then you're going to go back, you're going to want to see more. And so that's, in that sense, yes, I'm glad that it came about because more people can see it and enjoy the whole franchise as just a whole.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, actually, I would say yes. One way it was needed because I got to revisit the old show, you know, for this podcast, and also just because I was intrigued and I really liked what I saw. But no, because I think that actually when you, like when I compared it to the Muppets, my answer would be, outside of that selfish reason of me being reintroduced to the show, it's a no, because you're almost kind of destroying your fan base when you look at the people who are so dedicated to the show and they see something and it's just so void of what they know and what they love and what they respond to, that it, I don't know if it's destroying it, but you do leave a negative imprint. And I think that fan bases in that way, you know, you should be a little bit more, and this is like a really general statement and it's hard to please everyone, but sometimes these, you know, the executives and these people who bring it back, they don't respect the fan base. And this is kind of like one of those cases. And
I just think it's also, they don't understand the fan base.
And they don't understand,
usually,
you know?
It's really.
And that's at the end of the day what it is too. So for me, it's just like, it's just actually more just disappointing when you see something and you're looking forward to it and it's just not at all what it should be, what it could be. So that's where I come from on that standpoint. What about you, Rolando?
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think it was needed. I don't think this remake was needed. I think the first episode is good. I actually think it could have just worked as a standalone, like a one-time special.
Yeah.
And, you know, just drop, maybe do like a Pinky the Brain episode with it. Maybe introduce, bring back some of the other ones. And that's it. I don't need to have an entire season. That's where they messed up here. Trying to give me a full season, it just felt, as I was watching, I'm just like, I don't know if I need this. I just don't. And I will agree with you guys. It made me happy to go revisit the original one. And it made me so happy when I saw, I was like, oh, they're all available right now on Hulu. Hulu, I feel like you guys owe us money here for advertising, but they're all available on Hulu. And it's like, oh, cool. I can go revisit these at any moment. Why they're on Hulu is a surprise to me because I thought they would be on like HBO Max, but that's neither here nor there.
True.
They got the deal before HBO Max existed.
It. Okay, there you go.
There may be a day they could move.
Would not be surprised. The streaming wars are serious, guys.
Seriously.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was needed. I think maybe the biggest question I was struggling with while watching it was kind of who is this reboot for? Like, is it for the original fans or is it for an entirely new fan base? And more importantly, it just makes you question. it makes me question just like who is watching this, because I don't know, sometimes I think the jokes were a little bit too risque for the kids that I remember. I even from like I'm thinking this is just me as a young person watching it. It's like, is this too risque, or am I being too Pollyanna? Because like I'm sure kids nowadays, because of the internet, are exposed to a whole lot of weird shit that I wasn't growing up. You know what I mean? So it's one of these weird, it's a weird juggling act, and I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, based on the Jurassic Park opening, I definitely think it's for older people. It's more for an adult fan base, you know, people who are familiar with it, who are anticipating their return.
Why? A lot of kids have probably seen Jurassic World.
That first episode, like, is very much for the old fans and things like that, because there's so many like references to the fact that the show was in the 90s. Like,
yeah. And I think they were going almost for more adult humor, but they forgot that like part of the reason that we still love it as adults is it's wholesome content.
Right. I think there's something kind of is when you're dealing with streaming, you kind of lose the censors. They would always make fun of the network censors on the original. And what was nice about having a network censor was that they would pull you back and you'd have to be clever in how you presented material.
Just like old movies,
be a little more subtle, and if you can get it if you could sneak it past the censor, then it's like, ah-ha-ha.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like, so there's a few moments that, you know, that are very famous with that Animaniacs fans love to promote that got past the network censors, but now it's like, well, you can just do whatever you want because it's on Hulu.
I mean, when we talk about film, that's why the Hays Code just made filmmaking so much more interesting, right? Because you had to figure out how to sneak in some references or innuendos in there without getting flagged. And that it's ultimately like trying to do that sometimes makes art much more creative. It makes you more creative, right? When you can do anything and say anything, it just makes it... it just makes it kind of tedious and like kind of just like, all right, well,
it's the Jaws don't show the shark kind of thing, you know. Yeah. You gotta have these restrictions that make it a better property.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, you guys, for coming on and discussing. I've learned so much.
Same.
Actually, like I did some research, but you guys really helped shine light on this property. So tell our audience where they can find you guys.
Well, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, of course, all that stuff. But we're also a member of the RetroZap podcast network. So we're over there. You can get a quick link to us by going to animaniacast.com, and that'll take you over to the RetroZap archives of our show. And of course, we're on any podcast player that you can think of. We're on it. Just search us. And
we have a Patreon, Joey. Don't forget to plug a Patreon.
Oh, very important.
You plug it away.
Patreon.com/animaniacast if you're a super fan, then head over there and you can get all that stuff, like the commentary tracks. It's a lot of fun. We just started that. It's funny because I know some podcasts start Patreons within a month of starting a podcast, and we waited 4 years. So
for our 200th episode, and then
Nice. Oh, it's so funny. We just hit our 100th last week.
We just hit our 100th,
See, it's good.
And we're super excited. Who knew? Who knew? Sometimes when you hit that number, you're just like, oh. What an honor, right?
To get past 10 is actually an accomplishment.
Very, very true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Give up. So, yeah. Hurry before for us, guys.
Before I let you guys go, can you guys do any Animaniacs like impressions? Are you guys any good at anyone? Anyone got anything?
I can't
either. I wish.
Scratch and sniff. What should I say, Nathan? What does Dr. Scratch and Sniff say?
The psychiatry.
I don't know what to say. The monkeys want to.
There we go.
That was good.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
That's my only Animaniacs in person.
Can you, Rolando?
I can't. Narf, and even that's not even that good. Right?
What's that?
That's Pinky.
That was Brain, right? Who?
Pinky does the Narf.
I know.
That's good. Yeah, that's about the only thing I could do. I'm good at, but
I maybe could do Waco, but it would be too. It's just because I like doing my fake Beatles impersonations. So, and I was like, it sounds like that. So that's it for me.
All right, guys. Well, this was great. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please find us on Apple Podcast, follow us, and give us a 5-star review. This really helps us out. If you would like to reach out to us, Rolando, where can they do that?
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram, instagram.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. And we're also on Facebook, Remakes Reboots Revivals. You can catch me tweeting at Remakes Podcast. And you can also give us an email. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. And don't forget, guys, we do have a Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals hotline. You can call us, leave us a voicemail. We just might play it on the air. And that number is 862-248-2326. We want to hear from you guys. So give us a call. Leave us a shout out.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, stay original.